The National Broadcasting Company presents Earl Stanley Gardner's A Life in Your Hands. Who knocked on the door? Was there a struggle? Where was the map? Listen while we place A Life in Your Hands. You'll never know when you step from the safety of your home when you may witness a violent death and be called upon to testify as to what you saw and heard. Murder is a dark enigma that strikes fear into the heart of man. Strange, baffling, mysterious. But the darkest crime one man can invent, another man can unravel. Such a man is Jonathan Kegg, created by Earl Stanley Gardner, the world's most popular writer of mystery, creator of Perry Mason, Doug Stelben, and other outstanding characters.
Anything else, Miss Rogers?
Here's something, Mr. Kegg. A note from the alumni secretary at the university. He suggests you come visit a few days.
Every time I go up there, I'm tapped for part of a new baseball diamond or a stained glass window in the chapel.
You never seem to mind, Mr. Kegg.
It's worth it to talk with some of my old professors again.
At least you'd be away from murders and crime.
Maybe so. I can't think of any reason why a killer would pick a town that small or a campus that quiet. But you never know. You never know when you may be called upon to testify to an act of violence in which you have become involved quite innocently. Even now, somewhere in that small town, perhaps at the college, there may be a crime in the making.
So will that phone ever stop ringing so we can get on with this? Dr. Allenby. No, I have no comment. I told you newspaper people before, I have nothing further to say about my discovery. No, I told you I have nothing to say. Goodbye. Hello. Is this the desk? Mrs. Crow, if anyone else calls, tell them I've left the faculty club. I can't be reached. Thank you. Now, back to my speech, Barlow. I was summarizing, I believe. Let's start the recording.
You have just compared Kalara Temple with other important discoveries when I stopped the machine. These recordings on tape are certainly perfect.
And my discovery of Kalara Temple will at last prove my theory. Namely, that the Mayan people came from the Orient through what we now know as Alaska, down the Pacific coast into Mexico and Yucatan. Further, and equally important, our findings will disprove much of the error, invention, and deliberate fantasy created by that prolific author of Journey to the Hidden Valley and The Golden Serpent. I am sure you can all identify the master of misinformation to whom I refer.
That was a very pointed bark at Mr. Weimer.
That was my intention, Barlow. Weimer's a fraud.
A disgrace to anthropology.
Yes. Why doesn't the machine go on?
The tape is still running. The pause is when you stopped for a glass of water.
Hmm? Oh, yes, so I did. I didn't lose their attention either.
You can't blame them. As you said, the greatest discovery since King Tut's tomb was opened in 1922.
By now, I am sure you are wondering about my future plans for excavation. I will lead an expedition to the interior of Yucatan as soon as possible. We will return with a golden treasure that will beggar the dreams of Spanish conquistadors. Thank you for your attention.
Exceptional paper, Dr. Allenby.
Yes, Barlow. Well, nice of you to record it for me.
I was glad to do it.
Good of you to feel that way. Now, what's wrong with the machine?
When the tape runs out, it always sounds like this.
No excuse for that confounded noise.
There we are.
Yes. Well, thank you. Thank you again.
I made a copy of your speech, Doctor.
What would I do with it? I have no machine to play it on.
I mean a transcript, a typewritten copy.
Well, tell someone else to bother me, and never mind the copy, Barlow. I'm coming. Wait a minute.
Who is it?
Doc Allenby?
Yes.
Message for you. Hi, Doc. Rocky's the name. Rocky Martin. Like I told you on the phone.
You said you had a message.
It's from me, Doc.
This faculty club is private. How did you get in here?
Through the front door. Tipped my hat and slipped the bouncer a five.
But the idea. I'll have you...
Relax, Doc. Take it easy.
Something I can do, Dr. Allenby?
Stay here, Barlow. I want you to hear every word of this conversation. Now, Martin, say what you have to say and get out.
Okay, Doc. I see here in the paper you found yourself some antique that's loaded with pots and pans made out of gold.
Come to the point.
I know guys who would finance a trip to Yucatan if they could get their hands on a piece of solid gold treasure. Now, you know where the stuff is. I know who'll back the trip.
This is preposterous. He's suggesting that you turn over the treasure of Kalala to...
Hooglums.
Get out.
We fenced the stuff for you and give you a cut.
Will you leave my room?
We're not through talking.
I believe I can end the conversation. Hand me the phone, Barlow.
Give it that, you punk. That's better. It says here in the paper you've got a map of the place, Doc. Well, maybe that'll do. I'll ask my business partners, and I'll check back with you later. Think it over. So long, Dr. Allenby.
Telephone the police. Tell them to arrest that man. No, this is ridiculous. I'll simply tell the doorman I refuse to see him again. How did he know about my speech, anyway?
The newspaper. I mentioned...
He didn't say that. Let me see the paper.
I'll go on to my room now.
Barlow, you stupid... You did this. My entire speech, word for word... You and that infernal recording machine.
At no time did you mention that the report was confidential.
I've been charitable with you, Barlow. I've overlooked your incompetence as my assistant. And your jealousy. Knowing full well you're a fool, a clumsy student, and a worse teacher. Now, by heaven, I'll... Weimer.
If I were you, Barlow, I would thrash the brilliant Dr. Allenby.
Get out of here, Weimer.
I read your speech, Doctor.
It was never supposed to be printed.
So, these things you say behind my back,
stay away from me.
You call my work errors, inventions, deliberate fantasy. You dare speak of me in this manner.
You are a fraud.
And for 25 years, while you stayed on your campus, read your books, and showed off before your students, I lived in jungles, endured fever, fought with the natives, studied, and wrote. Now you tell me I'm a fraud. You who found the Temple of Kalara after you read my report telling approximately where the center of Mayan culture was located.
That's a lie.
Did you read Mr. Weimer's report, Dr. Allenby?
Get out. Get out, all of you!
I go. But I'll never forgive you. I'll repay you when the time is right.
Not Dr. Allenby.
I'm a liar. And a fool.
Good evening. The desk.
Gordon Weimer, please.
Mr. Panford, do you have a Gordon Weimer registered?
Weimer? Oh, yes. Room 407, Miss Crowe.
I'm ringing, Mr. Weimer.
Thank you.
Dr. Allenby told Chief Norcott two men are bothering him.
Allenby's an old fuckbudget.
I heard him talking to you, Mr. Panford.
How did I know he wouldn't want to see any reporters? His speech was in the paper.
Only the man wasn't a reporter.
He said he was.
I'm sorry, there's no answer in 407. Any message for Mr. Weimer?
No. No, thank you.
The man said Dr. Allenby was expecting him.
$5 and you were sure. I certainly can't blame Dr. Allenby for... Good evening, the desk.
Is that you, Mrs. Crowe?
Hello, Professor Barlow.
I'm dictating a letter and I've come upon a word I can't spell.
Maybe one of us will know. Professor Barlow can't spell a word.
No. What is it?
What's the word, Professor?
You remember years ago, they opened a tomb in Egypt, a king's tomb in one of the pyramids. They called him King Tut.
King Tut.
T-U-T. That's all I remember.
I'm sending this letter to another professor, and quoting Dr. Allenby. I just can't say King Tut. The full name is Tutankhamun.
Oh, dear. He has to have a full name. Tutankhamun.
Tell him to call the library.
Mr. Panford suggests you call the library.
That's a very good idea. The number is College 4920, isn't it? Would you get it for me, please?
Just a minute. I'm ringing the library.
Library.
Go ahead, please.
Would you mind checking the spelling on the name of King Tut of Egypt? It's pronounced Tutankhamun.
Oh, we're about ready to close. Almost 10 o'clock.
I would appreciate it.
Well, I'll have to go to the reference room. Take me a few minutes.
I don't mind waiting.
Suit yourself.
Is she going to look it up for you?
Yes, I told her I'd hold the line. I hope that won't tie up your switchboard, Mrs. Grove.
I'm not very busy. I could hold the call here. Ring you when she comes back.
No, don't trouble. I'll just go on dictating my letter.
All right, Professor.
Let me see. Mr. Robert Kenneth, Harbin and Vine Publishers, 120 Park Avenue, New York. Dear Bob, I hope by now you have looked over my latest draft on the manuscript and find it to your approval.
Imagine that. Professor Barlow thought we could spell Tutankhamun, or whatever it is.
One of the few around here that gives the help any credit. Most of them treat us like... Just a minute, young man. Where do you think you're going?
I told you once tonight, pal. I've got business with Dr. Allenby.
He told me to keep you away from his room.
That's so.
Now you get out of this building before I call the police.
Okay. Lots of ways to skin a cat.
What does that mean?
Skip it, Horatius. See you around.
Did you see him? The same man. He tried to break in here again.
That's nerve for you.
Today, Dr. Allenby presented his paper to the Archaeology Society and caused a sensation. You know how the tyrant can spellbind a crowd. Well, this time he outdid.
Good evening. The desk.
This is Gordon Weimer, home 407. I'm checking out in a few minutes. I want my bill ready so I can pay when I leave.
Thank you. Get 407's bill ready. He's checking out.
To Mr. James Roche, 1423.
How long should it take to look up a simple word in a reference book and... Good evening. The desk. Hello. This is the desk. Hello. Dr. Allenby? Oh, the switchboard. Pan, something's wrong with Dr. Allenby's line.
Appreciating your cooperation, I remain truly yours, John Barlow.
I can hear Mr. Barlow, all right. Hello. Hello, Mr. Barlow?
Hello, this is the library. Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm
spelling on that word is Tutankhamun, with an umlaut over the U.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
What's wrong with this switchboard? Hello, Dr. Allenby. Dr. Allenby. Mr. Panford, Dr. Allenby doesn't answer his phone. It's off the hook, but I can't get him to answer.
That newspaper fella. Maybe he got in the back way. Call the police, Miss Crow. I'm going upstairs.
Be careful. Be careful, Mr. Panford.
Mr. Panford.
Dr. Allenby was lying near the table, face down, arms outstretched with a dagger in his back. His telephone was lying on the floor beside him.
When did the police arrive?
A few moments later.
Thank you, Mr. Panford. That'll be all. A coroner. Coroner Broman. Yes? Yes, what is it you want?
My name is Jonathan Cake. I'm an alumnus of the university, and I have many friends here. I'd like to offer my services.
In what capacity?
I often serve as amicus curiae in cases of this kind.
Amicus? Oh,
Oh, yes, yes, of course. I believe I recall your name, Jonathan Keg.
Well, certainly. Pull up a chair.
Thank you. Quiet. Quiet, everybody. Now, this gentleman is Mr. Keg. He has a national reputation for serving as an amicus curiae, a friend of the court. He kindly offered to help me in this inquest. Understand now, he represents no one. He simply uses expert knowledge and experience and his ability to cross-examine to get at the truth. Anything more, Mr. Keg?
I believe that covers it.
You go right ahead.
Call Rocky Martin. I am not satisfied with some of his answers.
Mr. Martin, will you return to the stand?
Will you tell us again what you did after you were ordered to leave the faculty club?
The first time or the second time?
The second time.
I drive to the nearest place that's open, buy a cup of coffee, and try to figure out what to do next. Maybe I call my partners and tell them I'm getting the brush off. Maybe I forget the whole thing.
Can you prove you were in a cafe at the time Dr. Allenby was killed?
One of the girls on the counter might remember me. I gave her a little routine. She says, get lost.
We'll check on that. Now, will you tell us why you came to the campus to see Dr. Allenby?
I stopped in town for a hamburger. I see in the paper about a professor who knows where to lay hands on buried treasure. Being a small boy at heart, I figured it'd be good to pick up the doc and go digging. I call long distance a few other guys who say they'll bankroll the trip if the doc guarantees a payoff. What next is logical. I go see the doc.
And he refuses to cooperate?
He is insulting. He calls me a hoodlum. Me.
So you threaten to return and take the map that shows where the treasure is located?
I say maybe the map will do.
Chief of Police Norcart has testified that Dr. Allenby telephoned and said you threatened to take the map. He asked for police protection.
Maybe the doc was upset. Ask the little guy over there, Mr. Barlow. He heard what I told Allenby.
Why did you try to see Dr. Allenby again?
Give him a little time and people change their minds, you know.
What was his answer?
Like I say, I never popped the question. I never got upstairs.
That will be all. Next, please, Professor John Barlow. Professor Barlow, Mr. Martin says you were present when he talked to Dr. Allenby.
I was.
What happened at that meeting?
Mr. Martin entered the room as I was about to leave. He presented his proposition to Dr. Allenby, who flatly refused to be a party to it. Mr. Martin mentioned something about the map and said he intended to return.
Was his manner threatening?
He's a large man. He resented Dr. Allenby's refusal to cooperate.
Was Dr. Allenby concerned?
He said it was ridiculous.
When did you leave Dr. Allenby's room?
After Mr. Weimer came to see him.
Mr. Weimer?
Yes. A professor from another university.
Did he threaten Dr. Allenby?
He said he would never forgive Dr. Allenby and would repay him when the time was right.
When did you leave Dr. Allenby?
9:30 or so. I was flustered. You see, I had displeased him by giving a copy of his speech to the newspapers.
Did you argue?
Dr. Allenby had a violent temper. But I have weathered his storms for over 25 years.
You left his room and went to your own?
Yes. I had some letters to dictate.
You stayed in your room?
Yes.
You were on the same floor near Allenby's room?
Yes. A few doors away.
You heard no unusual sounds? No loud conversation?
No. I really can't remember.
Thank you. That will be all. Mr. Gordon Weimer, please. Mr. Weimer, you were in Dr. Allenby's room on the night he was murdered and you threatened him.
That is correct.
Why did you go there?
I was called a master of misinformation.
Then you had a case for libel?
I had every motive for murder.
Where were you when Allenby was murdered?
In my room, packing.
Was your room on the same floor as Dr. Allenby's?
I refuse to answer. I would do anything in my power to keep his justified executioner from being captured.
Quiet. Quiet, please.
Coroner Broman, I would like to request a recess until tomorrow morning. At that time, I would like to cross-examine an innocent bystander to the Allenby murder.
In compliance with Mr. Keg's request, this coroner's jury is now adjourned. And we'll meet again tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock.
Jonathan Kegg is about to call another witness. That witness could be you. If it were, could you remember what you heard? It would be vital that you do, for in this coroner's inquest, you would hold a life in your hands. In this national election year, there is one obligation of democratic American citizenship which leads all the rest. This all-important obligation is to go to the polls in November and vote. It sounds easy, and it is. First, make sure that you are a qualified voter in your community. Yes, you must register. Then choose the candidates for whom you're going to vote, and choose them wisely. Don't wait until Election Day is here. Begin now to weigh and to consider the qualifications of each candidate for each office. If you do this, you will know and know well the names and the qualifications of each candidate for whom you wish to vote. Yes, this one obligation of democratic American citizenship leads all the rest in this national election year. For we strengthen our free government and demonstrate its vigor to the world when we cast our ballots. Be sure you are registered now, and be sure you vote this November. Jonathan Kegg has called as his next witness a woman, Mrs. Lottie Crowe, switchboard operator at the faculty club. The coroner's jury is in session, and Jonathan Kegg asks his first question.
Do you recognize the three men seated directly in front of you?
I do. There's Professor Barlow. And the next, his name is Martin. Rocky Martin, I believe. And that's Mr. Weimer. On the night of the murder, Mr. Weimer asked for his bill and tried to leave. The police came. He resented being detained. When he heard what had happened, he started to cheer.
I believe Mr. Weimer called you earlier in the evening.
A few minutes before Dr. Allenby was murdered. He said he was leaving. I was surprised he was in his room because I had rung a little while before.
There was no answer the first time?
No, sir.
This Mr. Martin, are you sure he left the building?
He walked toward the door. That's all I saw.
Coroner Broman, Dr. Allenby was murdered a few minutes before 10 o'clock. At that time, Mr. Weimer did not answer the telephone in the room where he said he was packing. Also, the police report the waitress at the cafe does not remember Mr. Martin. Now, Mrs. Crowe, there were other calls. Will you tell us about them?
Professor Barlow called.
Yes?
He couldn't spell a word. That king from Egypt, King Tut. He needed the full name, and the library checked it up for him.
Professor Barlow called the library. Waited while someone found the spelling of Tutankhamun.
He asked us first. Mr. Pamford suggested the library.
So you looked up the number?
No. Professor Barlow had it handy.
What time was this?
A little before 10. He was still waiting on the phone when Dr. Allenby's light flashed.
This testimony definitely establishes the presence of Professor Barlow in his own room at the time of the murder. Now, I want you to remember each sound you heard on the switchboard. Say, 1 minute before the call from Dr. Allenby's room.
Mr. Reimer called.
A minute before Allenby's phone fell to the floor?
Yes, sir.
What was his room number?
407.
Go on.
Professor Barlow was still dictating his letter.
While he waited for the librarian?
Yes. Then Dr. Allenby's light went on, and I answered, but I couldn't hear anything. I thought the switchboard was broken again.
What did you do?
I kept saying hello.
Anything else?
I opened the key. I could still hear Professor Barlow. Then the librarian told him how to spell the word, and the professor Thatcher and hung up.
Nothing else? No other sound?
That switchboard makes funny sounds once in a while. I did hear a sound, like applause. People clapping.
Like applause. People clapping. Since the time we talked last night, Mrs. Crowe, I have had a chance to record on this tape machine a crowd applauding. And will you kindly listen and see if this is what you heard?
No, that's not right. It was lighter. Further away. I don't exactly know how to tell it to you. What's that?
Well, nothing to be alarmed about. The tape has run off this roll. The end is flattening against the machine.
No, don't set it off. That's it. That's what I heard.
Thank you, Mrs. Crow. That'll be all. Mr. Barlow, you have a tape machine?
I dictate all my letters. As Mrs. Crow told you, I was doing my letters while I was waiting for the library.
I'm glad you finally remember your call to the library, Professor Barlow.
Yes, of course. Now that it was mentioned, I...
Coroner Bowman, the testimony of our innocent bystander, Lottie Crow, can be interpreted in only one way. Professor John Barlow killed his friend, Dr. Allen.
A man of your standing should be careful about accusing people, Mr. Keg. Dr. Allenby and I
were hated enemies, mostly because he never noticed you.
I was his assistant.
And had taken his abuse for 25 years. You saw two other men who might be blamed for his death. You did what you wanted to do for a long, long time.
I was in my room.
It was very simple. You needed 3 minutes to walk down the hall, pick up a dagger Dr. Allenby kept on his desk, and kill him and return. You knew Mrs. Crow and Mr. Panford would be flattered and remember that you asked for a spelling. You knew the library would take at least 3 minutes to find the answer.
And Mr. Panford suggested the library.
Professor Barlow had the phone number at his elbow. He would have had the idea himself if Mr. Panford were not resourceful.
I see nothing to deny. You have no proof.
You knew every switchboard operator checks long calls to see if the parties are still talking. And so you were heard talking, dictating letters. Tape recorded hours before.
But I could hear him.
You heard the tape recorder, Mrs. Crow, while Professor Barlow was down the hall murdering his friend. He didn't get back in time. There was an unexpected struggle. Dr. Allenby's telephone fell to the floor. Barlow hurried, but the tape had run out and was flapping against the machine. He picked up his telephone, talked to the librarian, and hung up.
I deny it.
How do you spell Tutankhamun?
T-U-T-A-N-K-H-A-M.
With an umlaut over the U. That is right, Professor. And you learned that spelling years ago. No archaeologist or anthropologist in the world would miss it.
I hated him. He would claim my word. He said I was stupid. Not even a good teacher.
Coroner Bowman, I recommend that you instruct this jury to find that William Allenby died at the hands of his assistant in the anthropology department, Professor John Barlow.
An anthropologist who couldn't spell King Tut's full name. Was that what got you on the track, Mr. Keg?
Well, if you remember, that fact was not mentioned until Mrs. Crow took the witness stand.
That's right.
The tip-off was Professor Barlow. He said he was the murdered man's friend. He was anxious to help find the killer. No trace of hate. And yet he admitted he had weathered 25 years of Dr. Allenby's storms. If anyone is persecuted and held down long enough, hate builds and someday it flares out.
I still think King Tut had something to do with it.
Professor Barlow should have remembered the curses of death found in the tomb of Tutankhamun. He might have asked the library how to spell a different word. Good night.
A Life in Your Hands is created by Earl Stanley Gardner, with script by Doug Johnson, directed by John Collins. Jonathan Keg is played by Carlton Cadell, with musical effects by Adele Scott, conducted by Whitey Berkowitz. This has been a partially transcribed Bell production. And this is George Stone inviting each of you to be with us again next week at a new time on a new day. The time will be 9 p.m. Central Daylight Time. The day will be Wednesday. Listen, for then the National Broadcasting Company will again place A Life in Your Hands.